It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel. It's Dialogue Conspiracy number 270, and it's May 23rd, 1977. And you'll have to excuse me if I sniffle or cough. I have a pretty bad cold, but I can handle it if you can. I'm used to it by now, have for a couple of days. I might or might not have gotten it up in Seattle. I was up there this week at the University of Washington and spoke at the university and taught a political science class up there and enjoyed it very much. There's some very good people. It's a fairly straight community, and they're not too much into conspiracies, but there's some people that are and are interested in the subject and want copies of the tapes to send up there, hopefully to put on an FM radio station up there. And it was it's interesting to travel. It's very interesting to see the reaction of the students and the student body to the subject of these government conspiracies. Last week I talked for a little bit on the cemeteries described in Nation magazine, February 1977, the Veteran Administration cemeteries that will take care of one quarter of the American population. Those, if you remember or didn't hear it, are going to be costing $30 million each. Five cemeteries, and they're being prepared for this large amount of the American population. This isn't a very pleasant subject, but it does fit in with some facts and figures from RAND and other studies that I have, and I thought I'd give you that magazine again if you want to get a copy from the library, February 1977, Nation magazine. And along those lines, not very happy news, but along those lines, is an article from last Sunday, May the 8th, the Sunday before this, in the San Jose Mercury. It's a syndicated article by Ron Leitner. He's an expert newswatcher, Howard Newswatcher, a world copyright article, and the title is "The Capabilities of Laser Submachine Guns Are Frightening." And this article is about Mormon inventors and businessmen in Salt Lake City who have designed and are now delivering and using the most deadly police weapon ever. It's called the American 180 Laser Submachine Gun. And I want to describe and read to you that article and go slow and summarize it for you. One of the cities where they have been delivered, incidentally, is Monterey, California. And I'll give you the reasons why when we complete the discussion of the article. I think it's important because it was Johnny Meyer who worked for the Hughes Corporation, formed a company called Hughes Dynamics, which he said that Howard Hughes never even knew about, that cost $10 million and took computers from the Los Angeles Police Department, information from the Los Angeles Police Department into Salt Lake City, into the data banks, and into their computers. And now we see that the Mormon inventors and businessmen have designed this submachine gun, which they're selling to police departments, federal law enforcement agencies around the United States and around the world. The makers have vowed the gun will never get in what they call the wrong hands. It is known as a super gun with massive firepower and accuracy. It's manufactured in Austria, but designed in Salt Lake City. It has five tiny .22 caliber bullets, the kind being described to kill many of these FBI informers and witnesses to the Kennedy assassination. And this ammunition is very quick. It's, as I say, it's similar to a .22 bullet, but it's a laser gun. It fires 30 of the laser bullets each second and has the same impact as if 11 men blasted away at the same target with a .45 caliber pistol, each one of them having it. It chops down telephone poles. It blasts through sheets of steel and cinder block. It punches brick walls. It chews through the side of speeding cars, and they already tried it at Fort Lauderdale in Florida. The laser beam sighting system makes it almost impossible to miss their target. During the past 24 months, 19 men and one woman have been killed, and they were victims of some kind of a .22 weapon similar to this laser beam. Some were potential police witnesses, some were witnesses for the FBI, and many would be witnesses before the Special House Committee investigating the assassination of John Kennedy. Some of these witnesses had been shot 15 times. which is similar to the way that this laser gun goes off, and in many cases, no shots were heard. This article goes into the fact that silencers can be put, the laser beam is a silencer, and if you remember in Dialogue Conspiracy about 4 weeks ago, I talked about the CIA and their silencer weapons that they've used for a long time. The interesting thing about this gun, it's as silent as a typewriter as far as 400 yards away. It has a telescopic sight when it's dark, and the laser beam can kill 1 mile away. Now, it's really hard to solve a crime when you have a silencer and a gun and a view and a perfect scope, and your victim is 1 mile away, and you can kill him with a laser beam. These machine guns are light and small. They weigh about 10 pounds, and they're described as a perfect weapon. Incidentally, this article I'm reading to you from San Jose Mercury News by Ron Leitner is not out of a James Bond book, and it's not fiction, and it's not in the future. They're being used now, and they're in process of manufacturing and distribution, and the amount of figures of guns to go out will alarm you, I believe. The importance of this is it can be put in a briefcase, and if you just press the button on the handle of the briefcase, it fires through the briefcase, so you can look like a businessman a mile away with a briefcase that makes no sound, and a laser beam can kill a person that far away, a mile away. Its capabilities are frightening. One agent could wipe out up to 200 people around him. When he fires this briefcase, all he has to do is pivot in a circle and wipe out 200 people instantly. The undercover model has already been used in Africa, and there's unconfirmed reports that the Israeli commando used this at the Entebbe airport when they made the famous raid to get the Israeli citizens out of there. Israel has bought 180 of these laser machine guns from Salt Lake City. Charles Goff, Sr., president of the American International Corporation, said that more than 150 police agencies in the United States have more than 1,000 of these deadly guns, and that includes the FBI and the White House. 4,000 of the guns are completed with helium neon gas laser that has a scarlet light, and they've been sold around the world, 4,000 of these. And the sales have now amounted to approximately 20,000 units in the Middle East, South America, and in the Far East. Each gun costs $1,000, but the bullets, the laser bullets, are relatively cheap. It's about 2 cents a round. It makes an instant mark, and when it blasts, there's a red dot that it settles on your target. So the gun doesn't even have to pick out the target. You just aim it at the person, and it'll find their heart, and the red light laser beam goes on them, and they know that they're going to be killed down with the laser. The marking, the red dot, is 3 inches wide on the victim when you stand 200 yards away on target. The police describe it as the most humane police weapon ever devised. It prevents the shooting when a suspect surrenders without a fight. When he sees the red dot on his chest, he knows it's time to give up, and he can't fight back because the laser blinds him. There was a near riot in the Utah State Prison where these were tested, these laser beams, and they zeroed in on the men in prison with a laser beam at the time of the riot. As I say, the police departments around the country have them, 150, and the manufacturer of the guns is not saying who has them, but he said, and this would figure first, Los Angeles Police Department, Sheriff Peter Pitches, Salt Lake City Police Department, Monterey, California, and Fort Lauderdale, Florida. They have the laser machine guns ready in their special tactical impact unit. The Florida Police Chief, Leo Callahan, said these super guns decrease armed robberies. If they just come upon an armed robber hundreds of feet away, the red light flashes on them and they just stop short. And as I say, it blinds them. The red light blinds them and goes in their eye. There's a blinding scarlet explosion of light that allows the policeman to respond because the person is temporarily blinded by the opponent. Now, it's very interesting, if you are blinded by this light and then the policeman shoots you with a laser beam, which they give an example in Fort Lauderdale, how do you know that they're now permanently blinded? They're dead anyway, so what's the difference? But if they don't use a gun on the person and they just use the red light to blind them and round them up, they are able to see afterwards. The new shooter for these weapons is
learning them within minutes. They say that there's no training, no special training. It's similar to taking a high-pressure garden hose and watering your garden. You just take it. There's no recoil and there's no movement. The manufacturers are on call 24 hours a day. They can't account for every gun, and they admitted that the FBI had 180 of these that were stolen from a gun dealer in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And this could account for how these witnesses to the assassination committee can be killed, or other witnesses can be killed and taken away with silencer and laser beams and no sign of a weapon. Already 150 of these 180 were stolen from New Mexico, and that would be enough to change the entire political climate of the United States. They are manufactured in Voir, it's a town in Kufstein, Austria, between Innsbruck and Munich, Germany, and they're being manufactured at quite a great speed. On the designing board, they also have police aircraft that'll have laser weapons. They'll fire 60 rounds a second with a special squad unit of 4 180s, a firing swivel for jeeps, for patrol cars, for special vehicles, and they fire these laser beams 7,000 rounds in 1 minute. The men who made this weapon in Salt Lake City said that they are all Mormons, and that there's speculation that the Mormon Church is part owner of the weapons company. They recently received 70,000 shares of the stock in the laser weapons that are provided for the police and the special forces in the United States and around the world. But this is the interesting fact. There are 16 million shares of stock owned in the laser weapon business. 16 million shares are out. 70,000 were given to the Mormon Church. And the man who manufactures the laser gun said, this is a quote, "The guns do not violate in any way the principles of the Mormon Church. We don't drink and we don't smoke, but that has nothing to do with fighting a war. There are many Mormons in the FBI and the CIA and the Secret Service. We are no pacifists. We are helping to shoot the bad guys in today's war on crime." And when you think of the racism and the anti-Semitism inherent in the Mormon Church, and they're defining the good guys and the bad guys, and they're sending these weapons to the police departments around the country, I think it's a little frightening. I think it's frightening because, as I say, they can chop down phone poles, they go through walls, they go through speeding cars, they ripped out a car in Florida testing it. The police departments have them, 150 police agencies have them, and they're easy to aim, they never miss, they can blind the person, and they're very open that we are going to use them for the bad guys. We don't drink or smoke, but that has nothing to do with fighting a war. And the war, obviously, has to be against American citizens, because the American citizens, FBI, police, and Secret Service are getting the weapons. Well, what would be the circumstances that they would use these, or would use the SWAT teams in the United States? I believe that somebody like Vice President Mondale, who had food poisoning, I think it's flu in Yugoslavia, could get a touch of food poisoning the way that Woodrow Wilson did. I believe that Jimmy Carter could easily be assassinated just prior to the next elections. I believe that Spiro Agnew could come out with Ronald Reagan and say, I'm going to be president and vice president again of the United States. And if the people demonstrate on the streets or object to that combination of, say, Ronald Reagan and Spiro Agnew, they could easily be gunned down by these laser beam riots that the police are being supplied in every major city of the United States. That's the only possible justification for it. We're not providing low housing, the reduction of food costs or transportation or new jobs, not too many jobs for the middle class children getting out of college. And I think the provision of these weapons to the FBI and CIA and the Secret Service means that if you wanted to get around those men, such as Ronald Reagan or Spiro Agnew, you couldn't. The Secret Service will use them and gun you down, and the laser beams from the helicopters and the police cars and the hands of the police and law enforcement will be used to round up anybody who doesn't like that combination. If there's another assassination or a combination of deaths, I think the American people will be unable to handle it or to do anything about it. They'll be angry, but they'll have to take it. If there's an election, such as Adolf Hitler was elected in 1933 in Germany, I can't see any way, unless they stop the distribution of these laser beams on the basis of, say, the racism, the anti-Semitism coming out of Munich, Germany, Salt Lake City, the Mormons, buying from the police departments unless you get your energy into some kind of activity to find out why the one quarter of the population's burial ground is being provided now and why the weapons are being provided. You're going to be in for a shock because as these leaders get systematically killed, there's no reason to believe they wouldn't be killed again. This happened in Southeast Asia when Premier Thu had an election. It took 20 or 30,000 deaths of his opponents to be locked up or killed to get him elected. And the manufacturing and distribution of a corporation that has millions of shares of stocks and gives the Mormon Church stocks and says this is a Mormon project, given, as I say, their known racism and anti-Semitism and their links to the intelligence community, this is the most dangerous kind of activity, and it should be stopped and pulled back and not allowed to be going any further. And then the sidekick to the laser weapon, of course, is the SWAT teams that were brought out at the time that Patty Hearst was killed. Not killed Patty Hearst, yes, five members of SLA were killed. Patty Hearst and Emily William Harris got out of that shootout. They weren't in the houses, but the others were killed in Los Angeles by the SWAT team. And that was the introduction of this military unit that then had its own television show and may still have, for all I know. But there was an article in the New York Times and also the Washington Post just 2 weeks ago, and it said, numbers increasing, SWAT units growing, yet accomplish very little. And the point is there are no riots on the streets. There is no organizing. But they're ready. When they're needed, they'll be called in. They give an example of the police force in Highland Park, a well-to-do suburb in Lake Michigan, has a special weapons and tactics SWAT team. They've never used it, but they fund it and they train it. In West Hartford, Connecticut, they have a SWAT squad, although no police officer in the town has yet fired his weapon. They've been prepared for 6 years. The SWAT team in Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department provides security for the Academy Awards dinner. They dress up in tuxedos. They work with the local police department, and they're available and they're training for when they'll be needed. It goes on to say that the LEAA is funding these SWAT teams in major cities all over the United States, and they're getting more and more of them, even though there's no indication of terrorists or violence or reason for riots. We know there's a SWAT team up at Davis. When I spoke up at UC Davis last year, there were students that were complaining about SWAT teams coming into a quiet little college town like that. We know that the people in Santa Cruz have been fighting the SWAT teams. Again, a quiet, peaceful college town that doesn't need it. And little towns like that, Davis and Santa Cruz, are getting SWAT teams. There are 3,000 police forces in the United States that have them now, and they're in the towns and suburbs. And, of course, this is to protect the rich if the riots come down or to keep people from touching the wealthy. The SWAT teams are there to protect the residential section and to keep those people who run the economy and the system going, more or less, from intrusion from mobs when there become riots on the streets. The metropolitan areas of New York, Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, Newark, New Jersey, Trenton, San Francisco, Cleveland, Detroit, Atlanta, Houston, Indianapolis, Hartford, all have SWAT teams. They're specially trained. Incidentally, the man who first devised the SWAT team for the Los Angeles Police Department was a gentleman who was married to Marilyn Monroe. He met her when she was a riveter at Lockheed, and her career was escalated through the Howard Hughes interest in Marilyn Monroe, and her husband went to Tucson or Phoenix, Arizona, and conceived the first SWAT teams for the Los Angeles Police Department, where they were introduced with all their glory. The Santa Cruz, California SWAT uniform is a black jumpsuit, and it resembles the uniform of the Viet Cong. In Houston, in the metropolitan area, they wear olive drab army fatigues, but they're dressed all the time, and they're ready to go. I think that in order of priority of some of the things that we should be doing in the United States, in addition to entertaining ourselves or diversifying our interests, is to think very strongly about getting the government out of the medical business, closing up the germ center in Atlanta, Georgia, that was behind the vaccine, flu vaccine hoax from Fort Dix, or the Legionnaire disease, the bungling of the case of the Legionnaire disease, which was not a disease at all, but a chemical identical to Army tests at Fort Derrick, Maryland. I think when the Legionnaires got sick, the doctors in Philadelphia should have handled the case, and if they didn't, doctors could come in from Harvard or MIT or Boston or New York, and I think we should take the government out of the medical business. And I think we should take the government out of the Hughes Medical Institute, where they are into genetic research and funding doctors and sending them to hospitals around the country, and we don't know what they're doing or who they are by name. And I think the money from the Hughes aircraft should go right into the Internal Revenue and the profits closed out, and all medical institutes be run by doctors and interns and scientists, and that they have an accounting, say every year, every 2 years, for the public of what they're doing, whether it's kidney or cancer or heart or lung disease, and they account to the public on the books if they receive tax money of what they're doing, and get these special SWAT teams out and get your laser beams and call those back if you can. I don't know how you can, because that's big business, but I feel very sad about that, and it's one of the gloomiest articles I've seen. It's consistent with what I know is happening, and I think that you should get interested in it. Maybe go to the library and copy May the 8th, 1977, the San Jose Mercury, copy the article, and call up various talk shows here in town on KIDD or KGO or wherever, and let people know what you think of these kind of weapons, and go to your police departments and see and check on why these are necessary, and let's get rid of them before we are forced to have some kind of a furor and we get out in the streets and then get mowed down with these laser beams. As we've heard on the news, going into another subject now, I want to talk about a bank that is having trouble. You may have been reading about the Credit Suisse Bank in Zurich, Switzerland. The articles about the Credit Suisse have been coming over the United Press, not the Associated Press, because two of the bank officials just committed suicide last week, and another one had a heart attack, and several more were fired from the Credit Suisse. Well, why is the Credit Suisse so far away important to Dialogue Conspiracy? It's important because this is the bank that's been named in several documents, in the Torbit document that I refer to all the time on the explanation of the assassination cabal, and also in Farewell America, and in other books. The Credit Suisse is named as the source of the funding for the various assassinations for John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King. But then it links to an organization called Permandex that I've talked about, with headquarters in Montreal and over in Switzerland and Italy, and the School for Assassins in Oaxaca, Mexico, where the FBI has had trained assassins. I'm sure the school is closed now after these documents came out, but this was a school where assassins were trained to go all over the world to kill heads of states, funded as a front, as a missionary, and funded by the FBI and the government tax money. Credit Suisse was a bank that was charged with handling a lot of the finances of these plans to kill Charles de Gaulle and many of the other assassinations, and it also is involved in the Howard Hughes hoax. It's the bank where Clifford Irving's wife went and picked up several $100,000, cashed a check that was supposed to be made to Howard Hughes, and went home with hundreds of thousands of dollars that still aren't accounted. The Credit Suisse is in trouble because this prestigious bank, it's the third largest in Switzerland, is missing $400 million. And the thing that frightens me in my research is that bank robberies are a way to fund the police state and fascism and the Gestapo. They were used to finance Adolf Hitler. They're used to bring out the Third Reich now, and bank robberies are a way of funding the extreme rightist movement. There was a large scandal in Nice just about a year and a half ago where these men were called moles, and they dug in holes and got into safe deposit boxes and took away millions of dollars out of a bank in Nice. And one of the men that was involved in that case was arrested just about 2 months ago, and he was in the police department, and he just went out of a window and disappeared again. And he takes these millions and millions of dollars, and he funds the most far-right fascist movements in the world. I mean, they are the continuation of the Third or Fourth Reich, and funds the Gestapo and brags about it. So the man is taken by the police, and the police, who also belong to the Gestapo, release him, and he is funding right-wing movements all over the world. And I believe the Credit Suisse's loss of $400 million is very interesting that it's coming out at this time, because that could explain their funding. Their excuse for losing $400 million was that they have a double bookkeeping system that covers their illegal activities. But the important thing, when so many witnesses are dying to the Kennedy assassination, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, or the Martin Luther King assassination, that as we add up these witnesses, and there's more every other week, These people involved in the Credit Suisse Bank have died. The article says that two had suicides last week, and one of them had a heart attack, and two heads were fired. It also says that the money was channeled from Switzerland to Italy, and the headquarters of Clay Shaw, who worked from New Orleans International Trade Mart to the Italian branch of Permandex, had set a headquarters for the people that had moved out of Nazi Germany. And they describe millions of dollars that went from Credit Suisse to Italy. These millions of dollars are missing. And now that the Kennedy assassination is being opened again, these are more witnesses that are being bumped off. They say that the partners, Bertrand Meural, a former director, Charles Bouchard, committed suicide, and chairman of the bank, Robert Lehrlich, has been hospitalized with what the bank said was a heart attack. It's also interesting that the proceedings were against directors of an institution called the Texon, which sounds very much like Exxon. I've never heard of the Texon Corporation, but the Texon is named in these reports of the missing $400 million. So I would say that at least those two suicides are linked to the Credit Suisse Bank. And last week, I think, on Dialogue Conspiracy, I was doing a little bit more on that Torbett document, the framework of the assassination to kill John Kennedy. And along the lines of the Credit Suisse Bank in Switzerland, that bank is named in Switzerland as being a source of funds. And there are names of organizations that pump money into this. And the principal funding agency for Permandex, that Permandex Foundation, is what I have alleged is the organization behind these many, many assassinations, not just the main famous people, but the witnesses to these cases that are killed afterwards. The funding agency for Permandex was Credit Suisse. In the Kennedy conspiracy, Paris Flamone brings that out in his book, and he names Credit Suisse as being the source of the funding for these various assassinations. And again, the funds of Permandex, this organization was set up in 1961 and 62. They first were going to take a shot at Charles de Gaulle in France. They tried several times, and they missed. And a description of Permandex is under the name of Clay Shaw. The Who's Who in the South and the Southwest has a description of Clay Shaw, who was a director of the Swiss corporation Permandex, also the director for the Centro Mondiale Commerciale of Rome. Those are the two organizations that were behind the funding of these many, many assassinations in Africa, Middle East, America, Asia, and Latin America. The funding came through Permandex, set up in 1961 and 62, and also their branches in Rome. These firms were directed by the same men, both the Permandex and the Credit Suisse. Their purpose was fourfold, according to this one Torbett document. First, to fund and direct the assassination of European, Middle Eastern world leaders considered a threat to the Western world, and specifically the petroleum interests and the backers of the petroleum interests. You think of how quickly King Faisal died in the Middle East, and then quickly his nephew was beheaded, and they said he had acid, and they changed the nature of the oil contracts that Henry Kissinger was making. And I think he was over there just the night before this person was murdered. The purpose of this organization that allegedly was working through Credit Suisse, which was now missing $400 million, was one, to fund and direct the assassination of European, Middle Eastern world leaders considered a threat to the Western world, and particularly the petroleum interests and their backers. The second was to furnish couriers and agents and transport and deposit and channel their funds through Swiss banks for Las Vegas, Miami, the International Gambling Syndicate. That's why so many of the syndicate members are being murdered now and silenced as the committee and the investigators get some of the facts together on the assassinations for Congress to see. They furnished couriers, agents, transported and deposited funds through the Swiss banks for Las Vegas, Miami, International Gambling Syndicate. The third purpose was to coordinate espionage activities of the Solidaris, that's the notorious white Russian community, along with Division 5 of the FBI, headed by William Sullivan, and with groups sympathetic to their objectives, and to channel funds and all the arms necessary to finance these groups. Now, these are the same groups that are receiving the laser weapons from the Mormon Church. You can believe that, and they're still in operation. The fourth purpose of this group was to build and acquire and operate hotels and gambling casinos, both in the Caribbean and in Italy and tourist resort areas. The financiers of Permandex were the U.S. oil companies, the H.L. Hunt family, Clint Murchison, John DeMeneal, he was a close friend of George de Morenschild, who just died recently, John Connolly, who was the executive of the Sid Richardson estate, a wealthy oil estate, George and Herman Brown, they're the large manufacturers from Houston, Texas. I believe Lady Bird Johnson owned a share of their stock, and George de Morenschild worked for Brown's and represented their interests in Haiti in oil exploration. Roy Cohn is named as one of the executives through Shenley Industries and chairman of Lyle Corporation as being part of the financier Permandex. Roy Cohn was one of the two prosecutors of Julius and Ethel Rosenberg at the height of the Cold War scare during the Korean War. And Roy Cohn worked with Senator McCarthy in the hearings with David Shine at the time that Richard Nixon was famous on his red baiting tour in Congress, was going after the communists. Roy Cohn was active in that case, too. And he's been very politically active with Louis Neiser and various attorneys opposing the conspiratorial view of history. They are staunch, you know, Oswald did it, a lone bullet assassin, and yet they're named in these documents as being a part of Permandex. Walter Dornberger is a part of Permandex. He is the ex-Nazi general, the head of Bell Aerospace. He was the head, that's where Michael Payne worked, the man who housed Lee Harvey Oswald and Marina Oswald. And, of course, one of the big people in this Permandex was Wernher von Braun, the co-worker of Mr. Dornberger, Walter Dornberger. I just saw the news that Dr. Wernher von Braun is dying of cancer. He's hospitalized now in Washington, D.C., and his years as being a Nazi agent in Europe and in America are soon to be over. He became vice president of Fairchild Industries, which is sending computer and data machinery to Chile, Argentina, and making the computer Nazification index system of people left, middle, and right in South America. He went from NASA, where he worked many years, and with Walter Dornberger, his co-Nazi war criminal, and they brought us all the know-how for the atomic bombs and for the space trips, but also the chemical, biological warfare and the devilish experimentations that came with fellow Nazis, that came over them, with them, is all linked, in my mind, in one package to the importation of these Nazis after World War II. Walter Dornberger was part of Permandex. Paul Rygotta-Rotsky was part of Permandex that funded these assassinations. He represents the Claiborne Oil Company in New Orleans. Paul Rygotta-Rotsky died in Houston, Texas, or Dallas, just about a month and a half ago. And 1 week after Paul Rygotta-Rotsky died, George de Morenschild quickly left town. He was teaching French at a college in Dallas area. And with no notice to anybody, he just quickly left town and disappeared. And it was his friend, Mr. Altman, the newspaper man, who said March 16th that George de Morenschild is missing and thought that he had been killed or done in. And the next time we heard about George de Morenschild was 3 weeks later, and he was dead. And the impetus for de Morenschild leaving his home and town and skipping out of the area was the death of Paul Rygotta-Rotsky. So that just in the last few months, we have Rygotta-Rotsky dead, and then, of course, the Credit Suisse is linked to Permandex, and now two of their directors are dead, and one is in the hospital with his heart attack. This is an organization that included J. Edgar Hoover, Frank Nagy, the former premier of Hungary, Clay Shaw, who headed the International Trade Mart in New Orleans. That's the CIA man that Jim Garrison tried to blame or arrest. He arrested him, but Clay Shaw was acquitted at the trial on the assassination conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. But that's because Jim Garrison didn't bring in the strongest evidence he had at the time of the trial, and also there were so many things going against him at the time. Other members of this board of Permandex were from West Germany. There was an Italian industrialist who married Hitler's finance minister, a lawyer from Rome, Italy, the secretary of the Fascist Party, and as I say, Frank Nagy from Hungary was the head of the Solidaris with George Mandel, alias Mr. Mantello. They were Hungarian fascists. And Munir Shirbaji was the uncle of King Farouk, who was recently murdered. Shirbaji is part of the Permadex outfit and part of the group that was named in these multi-layered conspiracies and assassinations. The five prongs of Permadex that I mentioned last week, and I can repeat them one more time because I think it's very important, were the Eastern European White Russian community, members of the Tsar's army, that were headed by Jean de Menil and Frank Naguet, who moved their headquarters to Houston, Texas, and were there for quite a long time and were supporters of Lyndon Johnson for 30 years. And when Johnson was vice president under Kennedy, Kennedy was murdered, and these people have been named as being part of that conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. The second part was the American Council of Christian Churches, headed by H.L. Hunt. We do know that the Christian Churches fronts, there's names of the churches in the Warren Commission hearings, volume 17 and 23, I believe, that the sources of money going down to Oaxaca, Mexico, individuals sending $25 a month, $50 a month, small amounts of money coming from churches all over the country that were actually FBI money, and these men were supposed to be missionaries, and they weren't missionaries, they were trained assassins. And then the third part of Permadex is the Free Cuba Committee, headed by Carlos Prio Siqueiros, the ex-president of Cuba, who died just a few weeks ago also. You can see that these deaths are coming down pretty fast. Their names are in these documents. So you have Paul Rogatorowski, George de Moranchil, Carlos Prio Siqueiros dying within 3 weeks of each other, and now, as I say, the officials of Credit Suisse. The Gambling Syndicate was headed by Clifford Jones, the ex-lieutenant governor of Nevada, National Democratic Committee man, and Bobby Baker. They worked closely with the Mafia family. Cuba was the headquarters of organized crime, gambling, narcotics traffic, and these people, the narcotic importers from all over the world, the Golden Triangle, the Vietnamese War, traffic brought in a combination of the military intelligence, and the Mafia. The Mafia and the CIA have worked together since the end of World War II, and Luciani, Lucky Luciani, started to work for the FBI. And the CIA and the Mafia are used as the hitmen, as a protective layer, so that the CIA wouldn't be blamed for these assassinations. And then, of course, the security division of NASA, the National Aeronautic Space, headed by Wernher von Braun and the Nazi rocket program, and their headquarters are in Muscle Shoals, Redstone Arsenal, Alabama, East Broad Street, Columbus, Ohio. This is the group that's involved in the Kennedy assassination, and of course, as various witnesses go before the Congressional Committee, I don't know how much of this will ever come out, because you can imagine how it would shake the institutions of America to their foundations if they face these truths. I think enough evidence exists to go into these matters, but Congress moves very slow, for sure. J. Edgar Hoover, the director of the FBI since 1924, has worked with the anti-communist group and with the Trotsky element, actually the spies against the Stalin-Lenin combine in Russia, the new Russian regime. He worked with the Tsarist Russians and traced back the origin of the Bolshevik taking over in Russia, and J. Edgar Hoover was working with those people to help them regain their homeland, particularly the wheat, the oil, the gold that was in Russia. When the Russians took complete control of their government for themselves, John de Menil of Houston fled to France, where he married a woman from the Schlumberger family, and then to Caracas, Venezuela, and then to Houston, Texas, and set up the Schlumberger Corporation. It's an oil company. George de Moranchil worked with all of these people from Division 5 of the FBI, with the White Russian community, the Solidaris, with all of the elements. The Greek Orthodox Church was a conduit of CIA funds, and with Lee Harvey Oswald. And Lee Harvey Oswald, of course, mingled with all of these people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He had no friend that I know of in any of the 26 volumes or books that have come out since that show that Lee Harvey Oswald ever associated with anybody who wasn't an oil engineer, a doctor, an anti-Castro Cuban, a member of the FBI, a member of the CIA. Every one of Lee Harvey Oswald's contacts were linked to these groups. According to this research of the Torbett book, Division 5, the religious group includes Mr. Bradley, the West Coast representative, and Carl McIntyre, who's been an agent of the FBI and the American Council of Christian Churches. you see, the Christian, the Billy Hargis Christian Crusade, the Christian churches coming into this is felt now in America as we get towards this Nazification. And I'll close with just a mention of an article of this directory. You might or might not have seen the new telephone directories that are being issued. There's one in Oakland, Richmond, and all around the country, Georgia, and everywhere. And they're to buy Christian. And the point is that the Christian Yellow Pages are for people to buy Christian. The explanation says it's for Christians, not for Jews or anybody else, but Christians. There's a margin of profit that you have to do business with, and wouldn't you, as a Christian, rather support another Christian who has the blood of Christ flowing through his veins? So that the Nazification of the commercial part of our country and our phone directories now is continuing, and that's why I keep harping on the origin of these Nazis coming here, because we're feeling it now. It's a few years later, but we're feeling it now, and we will fill it with those weapons. Well, I think that's enough bad talk for Dialogue Conspiracy. There is some good news recently. Maybe next week I'll bring you nothing but good news. I'm sorry for the bad news. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
There is a trip, I thought to myself, while driving down Route 68. The car in front is a Renault, it's not behind, it's not a Ford. There is a trip, how things happen. It was yesterday, it was in 1894, and if tomorrow's gonna come true, there'll be another trip. Slave.